masterpiece of hybrid vigor. Please raise your blades for a scribe of radical vernacular and incantatory consonant swapper who is quite fond of the letter K, Seshu Foster.
Received much press. In Oaxaca City, there was a big demonstration going on all summer long by the teachers union and by other organizations in the state of Oaxaca. It took over the capital city and attempted to oust the current governor, the pre-governor. This situation has dragged on all summer and resulted in about 14 killings, usually by people related to law enforcement in the city, and two of them have recently been arrested in the murder of a New York City journalist who was filming the demonstrations. A few years ago, I was in Oaxaca, and notice the cliché but nevertheless ever-present image of Che Guevara looking out from sort of all surfaces of the city. And it seems that that he lives there. In Oaxaca, the skinny kid leans against the wall wearing a red new Che t-shirt across the street from the Casa de Cultura de Oaxaca. Thick-set, middle-aged man wearing a grubby Che t-shirt walks on Morelos. Two stalls in the Zocalo during the Guelaguetza sell all kinds of Che t-shirts plus Subcomandante Marcos t-shirts. Students walk along the Alcala in front of the law school wearing Che t-shirts. PRD table on the Zocalo offers cassette tapes of Che speaking, videos, and bumper stickers. Hasta la victoria siempre. Even in the newspaper, there's a front page photo from 1967, Che dead. The Bolivian colonel points to his head. Taxi driver with a Che decal on the sun visor. As the crowd streams out of the stadium on Cerro 14 in a mass, sweaty and shuffling down the steps past the vendors, Che smiles on a poster between Winnie the Pooh and some unknown boy band. The same smiling Che is woven in a rug from Teotitlan, hanging in a shop downtown. The bus to Teotitlan has Che posted on the dashboard in the space other drivers reserve for the Virgin of Guadalupe. And on the back of the bus, the big sun-like face of Che roars through town, not to mention the unknown tattoos. All right. It seems like I'm out every summer having a great time, and last summer an accident befell me. I broke my ankle. This poem is a fall litany, sort of feeling sorry for myself. Marx failed the big deal fell through. My sense of humor failed. No one was there to laugh. Suicide failed. The idea didn't just catch on. Simplicity failed. Dang. Peace failed. Looked just like war. The war to end all wars failed. 1918. The Mayans failed. Civilization collapsed. Dinosaurs failed. Became birds. The sun went down, came up on the foggy day. The moon failed, so shut up. Dirt failed, came out in the wash. Your mom failed, look at you, kid. Courage failed, because of stupidity. The president failed, I pissed in his mother's milk. Capitalism failed. 100 million Africans died. Piss and vinegar failed. Salad untouched. Success failed. Britney Spears sang. The very notion of failure failed into the day. Violet failed. Blushed purple. The moment failed. Never ended. The stars failed. So here's a piece for the people who are now walking across the desert. Found a republic by tapping your fat brown nipple with a tendril of black hair. We hold self-evident the ceanothus, manzanita, yucca. Deliver an ink-stained fingertip to the tongue lips. The body's republic of desert night, running lights of semis like aircraft against the Milky Way. Found a sunlit republic by going ahead, amnonic memory of ranges. Heat, killing bad information. Found a living republic by staying alive, where even plastic jugs, distances and boxcars may live. Found a determined republic by leaning in your brow to listen with the febrile blood, acrid republic of human salt. Okay. My novel that Benjamin was referring to takes place in a couple obvious fake realities and a couple obvious real ones. It was not easy to get into the Farmer John meatpacking plant in the city of Vernon to do the research for this book. I had to lurk around the loading docks, pretending I was like a hog fancier. Like I wanted a close look at the unloading of pigs, because it's so delightful. So anyway, here's a couple distorted or at least views of the inner workings of the Farmer John meatpacking plant on Soto Street, City of Vernon, which processes 6,000 pigs per day and is the largest meatpacking plant west of the Mississippi. I watch Kusatli, weasel, give me the eye sometimes around the taco truck, especially since he only has one eye, which he likes to keep fixed on the voluptuous chavalita in the skin-tight shirt, particularly when she leans across the counter to hand someone their order through the little window over his head. Maybe at nighttime, with vapors rising from the smokestacks, lit below from here and there by spotlights, steam rising from styrofoam cups, the men stand around holding on break, steam issuing from their mouths like feathered plumes of speech in Aztec codices. Generally, I choose not to believe in paranoia per se. I don't go for raised conspiracy theory of the universe that says everything is the result of three jokers meeting in a hotel room in Miami in 1961, and the rest is just domino theories. Gerald Ford's presidential pardon, after the fact, smoke and mirrors. But there's something in Kusatli's glance that gives me pause. Fuck you, weasel. What you got that I want? I'll be thinking while smiling at La Sonia, who's handing me the paper plato de carnitas con guacamole, which I'm careful to keep level lest it drip grease down my shirt and make me look even more like another used up hard worker motherfucker who, in front of La Chula teen girl, who's handing me the change with that unnerving, dark-eyed smile that seems to recall something more important to remember than this. But I step over to the picnic tables provided for the 3 a.m. repast with a last glance at Weasel. In fact, he is nonchalantly watching me as he leans against the truck like he's taking his sweet time to order. As I sit down, I nod to him as if I appreciate his support in our bid to certify the Pinche Union. Sure. Here's to you, Kusatli. I tear off a bite of the savory, crisp pork flesh, tortilla soft as the skin of a woman's belly in the moonlight, with aromatic picante roasted chile salsa filling my sinuses. At 3 a.m., you'll find nothing will ever beat a belly full of heart attack carnitas topped with smoky hot salsa, swallowing hot coffee if you have to head back into the plant for another 8-hour shift. What do I know about Kusatli? He's an okay worker. He works hard, fast, but sloppy, so they're always shuffling him around the jobs that can't be screwed up too bad. Or pairing him with someone more reliable. Maybe somebody's looking out for him. Certainly, if I had his rep, I'd be looking over my shoulder. In the glare of the roach coach, fluorescence against the absorbent dark, Kusatli lifts his face to jibe La Sonia and any passersby, peering through the plant gate not too far away. Wouldn't see anything distinguishing about him, even at that distance, nothing to set Weasel apart from the rest of us. No matter that the grinning patter of witticisms, raffish charm, that had three turkey, not caught, even pirate, you could say, on his side, with black hair in a boyish, spiky cut, only the dark scar rising from the empty eye socket indicating a bit of trouble in the past. That indication, too, almost exactly like any of the rest of us. You can't go this distance and come this far without a scar of some kind. So what if you heard he kept women with families on both sides of the border, lost kids from one when he gambled away his debt with gangsters on the lookout to kill him till this very day? So he told friends and relations he was going to commit suicide, and then he ran away, never to be seen by anyone again. And here he is, in a blue Farmer John jumpsuit, looking just like any of the rest of us.
Thank you. Okay. Here's one that starts to merge with some kind of artificial Aztec alternate world. At least in this novel, the Farmer John, pig factory is a portal to other universes. Why not? You should see how happy the pigs look on the mural on the outside of the factory. There's a party in there. Okay. Through strange coincidence, I found myself a job at the same locale, Farmer John Meat Company, along with my so-called friends, Three Turkey, Ray, Nakak, Pirate, Weasel, and a few miscellaneous enemies. How are we to know they hired illegal Mexicans by the truckload to run the meat processing and packing industry for the entire city, the entire Southland region? The whole economy was built on the backs of our people, the so-called illegals. Lucky for us, we took our feathers off, shoved them in the pockets of our swap meat jeans, swabbed garish paint off our war faces into a borrowed snot rag, tied our hair back like locals from who knows where in our stolen Mongol motorcycle jackets, brandishing tattoos as we filled out our job applications in hieroglyphic Nahua script, never got our paychecks to no avail, needed a vacation all those years, supported the social security system with our taxes and labor. We did what we could. I noticed a bunch of guys from the unit sitting around the personnel office at the plant, pretending they didn't know each other, glancing warily at each other, but too shy to admit none of us could write this English. Didn't matter. Slicing meat was right up our alley. Meat, flesh, blood, guts, menudo, gristle, chicharrones, neck bones, tripe, puddled intestines, brains, carcasses split open and hanging upside down from hooks. Strings of blood swaying like the beaded curtain across a doorway. Fluids hosed down the steel drain. Heads with the eyes removed or sometimes not. Sclerotic in a pile, floppy ears, tails, snout, skin, yellow blubber, pieces of gray meat cleaned out from machinery and off the floor processed into those Farmer John wieners. 100% beef except for the pork. We were right at home. That is to say, in the continuum of time, I emerge through the steam. I push a dolly, a cart. Rubber wheels on a concrete floor, the steam swells up around me. Steam always wells up from the ground like lowland fog, ferns, broad green elephant ear plants outlined by the mist. I trudge through the ground fog in the rubble of Stalingrad, breathing out fog myself, strapped across my back, a machine gun. Chasing Nazi ghosts into the mist of history, I better hustle. I turn the corner of the meatpacking plant, garish fluorescent lights glare on the yellow enamel cinder block hallway and the concrete floor. This always happens. That sound of wind rushing through the canopy hundreds of feet overhead, the stillness of the shadows on the rainforest floor, the window left open, a brown leaf flattened on the floor in front of the urinals. A big steel tub of guts, tubal entrails, looping and snaking like white PVC hose through the pinkish water. I'm forever finding myself sitting on the forklift, staring down at whatever it is, pallet of breakfast sausage, the wind rushing through the canopy, a bird flying, crying as if lost, the wide river delta, an estuary opening out to sea below the mouth of the river. Sometimes I don't know exactly where I am. Which way next? Then a tapping noise against the sheet metal door of the walk-in freezer. Somebody walks in. Something rattles like a machine gun blocks away in Stalingrad. Burnt out blocks of tenement apartments emerge through smoke. empty windows against the pall. It will continue happening. The world goes on and on. Reality is infinite, says the Farmer John toilet store, toilet stall graffiti scratched at eye level. Shit is infinite. Somebody else scratched below that. Stalingrad or East Los, our homeland, the sea, our world, will never stop. I'm thinking that later, too, or earlier, staring at the letter on the freezer carton, Farmer John's finest pork sausage, the logo with the smiling farmer. Wasn't this part of what I glimpsed one day, shuddering out of a nightmare, thinking about something else entirely, walking along my garden path with a splitting headache? But when had that ever happened? I could no longer recall exactly when it began, but I knew it would never end. Okay. So, one last piece of the book. The Aztecs had a deeply religious view of the world. Is that why it was kind of out of whack? I mean, they had, every day was a special day. And to commemorate special days, they did human sacrifice in every way, including personal sacrifices where men carried around stingray spines in order to stick into their private parts to commemorate those special occasions. They had a, on top of the pyramid, they had a stone that was covered with Aztec propaganda, and they tied warriors to it and let them engage in one-on-one combat. This sort of a description of that, altered as you can tell. Tied to the Tizoc stone, I did a little dance back and forth, swift, evasive maneuvering, busting out my secret moves, drawing on every aspect of my secret Shaolin martial arts training. Sweat stinging my eyes as I gripped the machete as a protective shield, and Comrade Masla, keeper of the House of Mist, stepped up and casually let fly arrow after arrow. I almost deflected the first arrow, its razor-sharp steel quadriflange hunting head pinging off the machete blade as it slid straight up the length of my left forearm, ripping the furrowed skin the whole way, burrowing the length of my forearm to bury its point deep inside my elbow. Yowie! Wait, silly fucking poachly! I never felt anything like that before. Did that hurt or what? I almost deflected that one. Actually, the sensation of that first arrow ripping through my forearm, burying its point inside my elbow joint, reminded me of the time when I was 8 years old watching my mom cry, asking her, why was her nose bleeding? Dad hit her in the face, stupid, my sister said. I turned to make sure we were together as we departed that life forever. Then the next arrow struck me. I had just finished a Michael Jackson type Shirley Temple dance move, which I figured would fake Masla out entirely. So he'd either have to miss me completely or strike some vital organ. But he must have anticipated it high on the inside, since the arrow embedded itself through both buttocks on the high part of my ass, even as I prepared a smirk of victory. The smirk shape-shifted instantly into an astonished yowl of banshee excruciation. Fuck a duck. Fuck the famous golden Peking duck your mama rode into town on, I growled. Oxygenated sun flares from outer space blasted my spinal column. All of a sudden, I was in the supernova of her Yukio Mishima and his homo fantasies of St. fucking Sebastian. Pissed myself a little bit there. The second arrow embedded itself. That second arrow reminded me of a time when I thought I was cool at the new school, the new kid, looking for a brand new start. I flirted with this cute girl in art class. She flirted with me. I waited for her after school, but she ditched me. I saw her leaving on the back of some guy's motorcycle. Yeah, that second arrow hurt my feelings a lot. I gritted my teeth and threw the machete at Marcela, keeper of the House of Mist. I could no longer see him very well. He was just a shadow on the inside of the blood-red last light of the afternoon. Seems he stepped to the side without any exertion. The machete clanked, spinning off into space above the crowd, which was having the experience of a lifetime. Ask anyone who was there that day. They'll tell you that was the best thing they ever saw. Then the third arrow struck my right thigh dead center above the knee, so I went down. I was screaming, you can bet your ass, or what weasely fucking pushly ever, falling on the arrow, driving it through the other side. I was simultaneously whistling motherfucking Dixie like I was fit to be tied, fried in an electric chair. I was beside myself, convulsing with extra screams. I busily commenced trying to do the one-handed push-up, arrows sticking out of my body. I used to be good at that sort of thing. Couldn't seem to catch my breath. That last arrow reminded me of the time when I walked the streets day after day in 1930, week after week, looking for work because I was 15 years old, starved, and they told me they could call me. None of them ever did. The rest of that year, I couldn't even get a full-time job washing dishes or scraping out the bottoms of peanut butter jars for my dinner. Somebody or something was kicking my ass the whole year down the back alleys of that city. I struggled into position with my back against the Tizoc stone when the fourth arrow went through my right shoulder. And after that, I just lost count. I just lost all patience. What the hell? I couldn't keep up. What the hell? Not if Mashla was going to keep shooting arrows that fast. You know, when you fill out the insurance forms and police reports on these types of events, they're always asking you to recall every detail, but I'm sorry. At that point, I could no longer keep count. The fourth arrow did happen to remind me of, I don't know. What? Maybe the look on the woman's face in the cubicle in the back of the unemployment office. Maybe the sound the baby's head makes it when it makes. The sound the baby's head makes when it falls out of the high chair onto the floor because the mom was busy doing homework, distracted by something else. That fourth arrow reminding me of the ice crystals in the wind biting into your face as you finally stand above the old mass grave, long since cemented over on a sunny winter day. It's taking you a long time to arrive at this gravesite. The fourth arrow reminded me of the anonymity of death into which they drive whole peoples. The fourth arrow hurt. It reminded me of the dark kitchen, the squalor of love. The fourth, it reminded me not to be afraid. Death is like this. The fourth quadriflange arrowhead angled through my shoulder, stopped by the Tizoc stone on my back. I fell forward. This arrow reminded me that my pain is so deep that I ache now without explanation. Okay. Then they carried me to the Chakmu, laid me out on it, opened me up, and cut out my heart. Except that never happened. Let me make that clear. I would never let that happen. That might have happened in some alternate reality when I wasn't looking. Some other fucking world where they didn't let me get my 2 cents in, but it didn't happen this time because I didn't let it. I had to make my move sooner at some previous point in history, so that could never occur. All right. Thanks very much, Ben.